Yes, people. Welcome to the Property Strategy Podcast.
You are now rapping. You are now rapping with 50 Cent. You gotta love it.
Yes, people. Welcome back to the Property Strategies Podcast.
Yes, sir.
We're back with another brilliant episode.
Yes.
Got some couple kings in the building.
Come on.
I'm saying we got London, Birmingham, Nottingham, everything in the building.
Nottingham.
But who have we got in the building first?
You got your boy Gokes in the building.
Obviously, you got Akin in the building, but who's the special guest today?
You got myself, you got Romero, Mr. Brighter Investments.
Jeez!
Brighter Investments in the building. What? Legends in the buildings right now.
Come on.
I think Romero might be my favorite, you know, property investor.
You said that before, you know. Off air, he actually said that. He's not even capping.
Yeah. Nah, real talk, man. Because he's the level of stuff that this guy is doing, and the level of how humble he is, and he's just so open. He's someone that we need to like literally just champion in the community. In my opinion, we need to really champion him. He's a real, real gem. So thank you,
appreciate
bro, for coming through. You looked after me when I came to Nottingham as well. Come on, send me a couple of projects. I need to get out there again.
Come on.
I see some more, but glad to have you with us today. I guess we'll start from the beginning, bro. Where did your journey start? You know, how did Romero grow up?
Did you go uni? What was that like?
So to be fair, just like any other kid, I think from a young age, everyone goes to school. You got your friends and you see certain ways and certain paths. And I think every child has in their mindset or they should have their own decision that they can make from any age and say, look, I'm going to go left or I'm going to go right.
Right.
And you should know that from quite young. And I think role models nowadays are more easier to find in terms of the social media around there. Yep. So you can see Instagram, Facebook, you can see a lot of people that you can aspire to. I think when I was younger, and I'm a 90s baby, and like the 80s guys as well, it was kind of hard to, I guess, reach out to people or see people. You hear
Facts.
Word of mouth.
Facts.
But to reach them or be as close as a DM
difficult,
away
yeah.
was difficult.
Right.
So you always see people think, oh, I can't reach out to him, I can't reach out to them. And even me and my age now, I sometimes have someone DM me and they say, yo, brother, why not reached out? And in my mindset, I'm still from my kind of 90s era of you can't reach out to someone. And kind of a little bit scared, if that makes sense. Or thinking they're superior to me.
Yeah.
And they'll say, brother, we're all the same. And then we'll sit down, we'll have food, we'll be at a table. Even with someone like yourself, for example, who are still obviously well known in our game.
Right.
And some of the other guys out there that have crazy followings. So I think that's the thing from a young age. So you have that path. And I believe that I always wanted to be a certain person, a certain kind of role model for some youth in the future. So I set myself out of, I guess, not going down a certain way that maybe some of your friends went down and saying to myself, hang on a minute, do I go to university? And the answer to that was yes, at a certain stage when I'm ready. So maybe not at the normal age of 18, maybe 3 or 4 years down the line. I think I went when I was 20 years old.
Okay.
So a little bit later on. Why? Because in my mindset, I said, look, if I can put a little bit of savings away for something, not saying it's property, for something, I can use that later on in life. So when I'm then 22 and finish university, I can then maybe use that to buy a house or invest in a car or whatever that may be.
Yeah.
I used to run some events in London a few years back, and I spoke and said, when I had the money for a Mercedes C-Class, top of my head, I think 2009 plate. So if anyone remembers that shape, I had a spreadsheet with the shape of that car. I had £13,000-£14,000. I was thinking, look, do I now take that and buy this car?
Yeah.
The answer then was, hang on a minute, I used to go to a certain property meeting, a few meetings just to get a bit of knowledge. I also used to watch Homes Under the Hammer. I also used to read a few books, just to name one. I think Property Magic from Simon Zucci was one of them. That was a key one, and I think the Robert Kiyosaki one as well. I said to myself, hang on a minute, so I'm about to go and take all of this savings that I've worked so hard for, and 14 bags back then, I mean, equivalent to nowadays, we're probably talking about 30k, I think, 30, 35k nowadays, easily. So 13 grand back then, to go and spend it, something happened in my head and I thought, wait a minute, this is a bit crazy. So what I then did, I said, look, hang on a minute, let's go straight in deep, buy to let, kind of ready made, was my first deal. So little refurb, look, 3 or 4 grand. But what I did is I put a tenant in there first, did that 3 or 4 grand refurb a year down the line.
Just getting money in.
So just to get some money in straight away. So I kind of committed to a, I'm going to say kind of a ready made buy to let model, which is something that I'll never preach today. And it's also something that you don't really, I mean, I've never done it since then. Because you wouldn't do it. Why would you lock the money in?
Add value.
But I think buy to lets, they help with just getting familiar with the process, the buying process, and actually just, you know, getting a tenant in there and getting some money in. It's like, okay, this at least in principle works. Then you start to get more a bit risk averse as you go along.
And creative.
When you was in school, what kind of guy were you? Were you the class clown? were you the nerd? Were you the dude?
Growing up.
Like, obviously, you're a tall guy. Like, you could have been anything.
To be fair, I was still quite slim, so I wasn't probably as big as I am now. But I was not really the class clown. I was kind of there in the background, still observing, still with a group of guys that are the main guys within the school. Okay. So I was still kind of that guy. To be fair, and that's all the way up to kind of college and university.
Okay, cool. And when did the entrepreneurial spirit, I guess, kick in? Was it?
I think from young.
Was it always there?
From young.
Why? I
think going back to what I said, look, the mindset and looking for certain things in life or certain people that you aspire to be. I think from young, I'm not saying money related, but you always think, look, I want to be that guy. That was something in my mindset. I want to be that guy or the person that's the go-to person for this or for that. Not knowing what that this or that was. So whether it was to do with selling cars, whether it was to do with selling watches, whether it's to do with selling houses, playing football, whatever it was, I wanted to be that guy. So in the school football team, I want to be the striker, number 9. I want to be the one bagging 10 goals.
Okay.
Not saying it happened, because I was a striker in primary school at some point and didn't score a goal in the whole season. So, did I mean? And then scored 2 in the final game.
But at that time,
in the final game, you then realise all that hard work and training you was doing.
For real.
And scoring in training time after time again, but not scoring on the pitch. But then you score 2 goals in the last game, you realise that you've got to put the work in. So those little messages there later on in life when we get to somewhere now and we say, look, we want to go and build 100 houses on a brand new build estate. That doesn't come just like tomorrow. I go and buy a piece of land and take the risk. You got to know the process. Okay, so the important thing is that process and aspiring to be someone great. So from young, I wanted to be, I guess, that guy in a certain field. And that's where the entrepreneurial point comes in. I go to college, you go to the shop, I need a SIM card for my phone, it costs 30 quid. I then go on Amazon, it costs $9.99. What do? I go and buy 50 or 60 of them. You might say, well, I've bought 50 of them and you need one for the phone. Well, as a trial, I buy 10. I take one in my phone and I take the 9 to college and I start selling them. If you go on my Instagram, you'll see on there the actual post where I've show actually buying these memory cards and the actual basket and the purchase. So you'll see on there 15 of certain memory cards, 15 of a 256 megabyte, 15 of a 1 gig megabyte. So this is going back to 2001, I think, 2002. I would have been 15, so 2005, 2006, somewhere around there. But all of a sudden, you're talking about making the first grand. Again, guys that are 18 on the podcast listening today, £1,000 back in my days is probably equivalent to maybe £5,000 now or four grand. We're talking about a lot of money here. So to go and make your first £1,000 from wheeling and dealing is crazy. What did I spend on? I went and bought a Fiat Punto. So the money disappeared.
You grinded and just spent it.
And what happened to the Fiat Punto? Would it have a head gasket problem within another 2 weeks?
Damn.
So again, these are all lessons that you learn. You take valuable teachers away and you think, you know what, I'll do this different next time. And I think life's forever learning, as you guys know now, doing property, you're always learning. I'm always learning all the time.
When you came into the game as well, did you see many people? Because I think biggest thing for us when we came into the game was like, okay, we're doing this, cool, we're doing all right. You know, we want to try and find other people, you know, that look like us that we can connect with as well. How was it when you first came to property? Was anybody you could lean on to?
Really, to be honest. I think the main thing for me, I saw one of my uncles doing property. And I think they were doing it in the era where you had the 100% mortgages. Not that I knew that at the time, because I was young, being 16.
Okay.
So I saw him and I saw Herzl the Hammer. They're the two things that I saw. That's it. There's no Instagram to see this person and that person. There's no YouTube as much in that day either. So I saw that and aspired to kind of be like my uncle in a way. He wasn't doing refurbishments, he was doing ready-made. So I saw Homes and the Hammer, saw his model, did a bit of research and thought his model is great for guys with cash now because the 100% mortgage is eliminated.
Yes.
But the refinance model, learning and reading about it, seems the way to go. I went to a property meeting, as I was saying, and did see a young guy there speaking. And he was great in terms of, he was 4 or 5 years older than me. I looked at him and thought, hang on a minute, this guy's young, he's at the front, kind of the key speaker.
Right.
So what's stopping me being a key speaker in any type of venue? So what did I do? Did I wait for an opportunity for someone to ring me and say, Romero, come and speak at our event, because we know you do houses all the time, time after time, and you're doing many transactions, when I did later in years down the line. No, I don't wait for that opportunity. I go and set my own event up. Okay, so I did about 7 or 8 events in a Crown Plaza, which is in Black Friars London. Mm-hmm. And these events were all right, to be honest. They were great enticement events for beginners. Mm-hmm. I had about, I think the biggest one I did was about 47 people in the room.
Okay.
But for me to go and put that on, I mean, you're talking about a kid now from Nottingham that's going to go to London, run an event,
that's
fund it himself.
For real.
I guess it paid off in terms of, it's not about what came from that, but the thing of bringing 47 or 48 people out of their seat to come and listen to what you're saying about property, it's priceless. Mm. It's an achievement.
Yeah. Mm.
So with the first deals, obviously you said you started with Ready Made by Tillet. What was the next, I guess, step in the ladder of building your portfolio? What was the next strategy that you had to
So straight after that, after that first kind of Ready Made model, I did do the work on that one a year later before I then went again in terms of doing the refurb. Mm. But what I did straight away is I realised the problem. Okay, so for me, when I realise a problem, I find a solution straight away. Mm. The problem is this for 10 seconds.
Speed.
Okay, so it doesn't exist for longer than 10 seconds or a minute. We know it's there. Mm. How do we solve it straight away? Okay.
Wow.
Of course, for that 10 or 15 seconds, you've got a problem in your mindset. You're thinking, oh my days, this problem.
Yeah.
But then it's about, okay, solution. So how quick can you move from problem to solution? Yeah. And I think the quicker you move to solution is the quicker you get out of the problem.
No, I'm smiling because I think, okay, wait. What you're telling me is that when you come across any problem, you're saying 15 seconds later, you got the solution.
More or less, more that's time. The aim. Yeah, that's the aim. More time. Yeah, that's
I think,
the aim.
I think that property does that to you. I don't know. Yeah. Like, for everyone that I've seen that in this game, before that, people struggle with problems. You know, even at, for example, you know, school, academically, you have a problem, you kind of just ask the teacher, you kind of just fail, you just think, but property kind of forces you to
think on your feet.
To think on your feet and find a solution. Yeah. Is that the same thing for you?
100%. Yeah. So, I mean, look, again, going back to where I was, look, deposit-wise for this next transaction, we're talking about a 50, 60 grand deposit, a 20 to 30K refurb. So now we're talking about £80,000. I'm a young lad. I'm 22 years old now. Yeah. Okay, so I bought my first one when I was 22. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm now moving to my next deal at the back end of my 22 years old. Wow. Okay, so now £80,000, it's a lot of money.
Oof.
And again, nowadays, we're talking about 120 grand or something like that. Yep. So I sit down and say, okay, the first thing is, who do I highlight as the investor to come on board?
Mm.
Okay, I approached one of my other uncles that wasn't as superior as the other uncle that I said had a lot of houses. I approached him and said, look, here's a transaction I've got. I've got a girl that I used to go to college with that said, look, here's a potential deal.
Yeah.
Have a look at it. I've looked at it.
Oh.
She said, look, I'll save it for you. Someone rings to view it. They won't get the viewing. I will save it for 2 months if needs be, which is what she did. So the price I was asking for, they said, no, you then wait. 2 months goes on. No one's viewing this house. They say, look, we're willing to take the offer. So the offer's done. It's done. It's a done deal.
Yeah.
The money's not there,
right.
But again, we create the problem and we go and find a solution.
Right.
Okay, back then being 22, you say that's a big problem.
Mm.
Of course it is, but I know now what career I'm potentially going to go into in terms of property and how quick I'm potentially going to maybe quit my job after uni.
Mm.
So I've already got a job from uni here now. How quick I'm going to quit that? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? So I'm now on a journey in terms of, can I raise this money or can I partner with my uncle? The answer to that was within, let's say, a week or so, yes.
Right.
Okay. Is it 50-50 or not? At that stage, I'm saying, look, I'm the brains here.
Right.
So you bring, whether it's the 70%, I'll bring the 30, but we'll still split it 50-50. He's sitting there obviously on his big salary at work, for example, saying, look, why not?
Yeah.
I'll take a chance on this kid as well because this kid's shown me something, which is me being the kid. I've shown him that I've got the business acumen.
Right.
Okay. So we go and do that transaction. We learn. For example, there was damp in that property. We extended the kitchen. We dug down. So these are things I did myself in my early days. So I got the spade and shovel and dug down like 300 mil deep into the soil
because
there was clay tiles in the kitchen under the extra soil. So there's no kind of sellotex, DPM. There's no concrete. There's nothing like that. No ballast. So I physically dug myself. It was hard. Don't get me wrong. So I stopped halfway then got the guys to finish it off. But the point I'm making is I know how hard it is. So now when someone says, look, I'm digging a foundation, it's difficult. In my head, I know.
One thing I love about Romero is that when I went on site to see you, like he had the, because he has like a main contractor thing. Well, you have a few main contractors.
Yeah.
He went out there. Bro, number one, this guy talks technical, yeah? And he doesn't know he's talking technical, yeah? He talks very technical. But you can see that no one can pull like all over his eyes.
Yeah,
he knows every single detail of every single thing. And bear in mind, he might have 10 projects going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
He knows everything that's going on. So I guess that's why you wanted to get there on the first, like at the beginning. Like,
yeah, that's it. So, I mean, again, look, I went into some other stuff and I speak on obviously one of the podcasts I did with Tej about structural damage. Mm. And again, things like this, look, I want to face all these problems and let's find a solution to them. Mm. Look, we can do as much reading as we want from books that tell us about structural damage or YouTube video now that's there, which is great. We can talk to the specialist in that area. That's what I think is the key thing. Okay. So the specialist being a damp contractor that I would have had, let's say going back 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I stand there and I talk to him for 10 minutes on January the 1st, on March the 15th. So throughout that whole year, just taking little gems in from him.
Right.
So what I'm saying there is I'm not a specialist in damp,
right.
but I know certain things that he's obviously told me and certain things that occur to make the problems arise. Same with structural damage. I've done enough projects that have gone through certain elements of them that I could sit here and do an hour PowerPoint presentation about structural damage. But I'm not a structural surveyor.
Right.
Okay.
So I guess it's knowing like how to get the information out of them as well when, you, when you're talking to
them
as well.
That's it. And I paid for enough, let's say, structural reports
that
I can go through 10 of them and see all these little problems in there. That I can then say, look, on this house, okay, I'm not going to do it on this one maybe because the same problems in one of the ones I've already done.
That's right, yeah.
So to speak.
That was an amazing story with the first door. So then your uncle funded it, he got on board. I'm assuming that one rented out fairly quickly and it went well.
Yeah.
You know, what was the sort of next deal after that and deals after that?
Yeah. And I think just a quick one, sorry, before I move on. So in terms of being technical, so yeah, I think obviously what you said then, I can I do know quite a bit of technicality within the market. But someone would sit there and say, well, I don't need to know everything. And what I would say is I worked with this girl before in the past and she said she's not sales. So she said, I don't need to know all the technical aspects in depth, but I need to know little snippets of everything. And I think that's kind of the same process that I tried to take away.
The
little snippets of quite a lot, but not too far too in depth to say, that, look, it's this, maybe.
X, Y, Z.
That's it. But the little snippets is the key thing. So yeah, moving on from there, as you said, in terms of what was next. So I did a fair few of those buy-to-lets, which are the 20 to 30, 40K refurbs, I would say, over the next kind of 2 years from there.
Yeah.
I then came to a point in 2017 where I kind of said to myself, look, I'm ready to quit my job.
Right.
The reason being is I went away and built a brand new build then in 2017. But just prior to that, I started to do more, I guess, back-to-brick refurbs and the bigger, like, 60 to 90K refurbs back then in 2017.
Okay.
So these are like the 100K plus ones nowadays. Back-to-brick, full rewire, full plumbing, the lot, taking down joists, putting joists back in, houses that have, door frames have fallen and they're not like straight anymore, the brick walls have fallen and lopsided. So moving into that structural damage realm, again, as I started to get more experience, you then build a little bit of a cash flow. So what I mean by then is, look, I'm a key believer of you take a step back to move a step forward, okay? And you might say, what do I mean by that? Well, what I mean is, look, from a job perspective, I was working somewhere and I was on a salary of, roughly speaking, let's say £1,300 a month, £1,400 a month, which is not crazy money.
Yeah,
it's okay money, look, you pay your bills and stuff like that. But I said to myself, look, can I, what's the minimum I can survive off? And I think back then I was sitting there saying, look, I can last on £400 a month.
Oh, wow.
And someone might sit there and say, £400 a month? What are you doing £400 a month? Which is obviously crazy. But look, you got to buy food, you got to pay rent. So for me, it's about, look, how do I minimize the outgoings? Forget all the luxury stuff at the moment. Forget we're going to wherever we're going Dubai or we're going Marbella or Miami or anywhere like that. So it's a case of, look, how do I minimize the outgoings? And how do I move a step forward in the property game? So that's exactly what I look to do. Quit my job. And I saw it as an avenue to move forward by having more time to then push into property, talking to people that I can partner up with, for example, gaining the recognition, hosting these events, putting the work in on the late nights to do the research on the spreadsheet, the spreadsheet and the PowerPoints, for example, that I'm then going to deliver to people.
I want to dive into that a little bit because a lot of people are in that place where, you know, they have a job, you know, they have a passion or business or let's say property they want to dive into. What was the catalyst thing that you, you know, a couple of things you have to focus on in order to make that transition as smooth as it is, because it's never going to be smooth, but you know, that helped in that transition, basically.
I think time's a key thing. So what I'll say is, look, for me, I still worked. I made the time count, okay? So I used to finish work. I remember I still used to go to the gym with my friends. So we'll sit, we'll stand there doing weights and we'll still talk for another kind of 2 or 3 hours.
I know.
But I think, look, it's time. So for me, rather than sitting down and then watching the series of Power, for example, or whatever was on back then, Breaking Bad, for example, which I still watched. But for me, it was like, look, can I commit now 9 to maybe even 11? On some kind of research. Okay, research was key, your marketing strategy, the market itself. How does a refurb look like? What's someone else done? even just an episode of Here's the Hammer.
Right. Mm.
And then the final hour before bed, for example, I then watch Breaking Bad as an example for an hour.
Okay, you might
squeeze it to two episodes and get bed late. But that's the point I'm making of, look, can you somehow balance a little bit? I mean, don't get me wrong. Look, I was at a job which, all due respect to this job, I was able to then nip out for an hour lunch and do viewings. Mm. Well, I was having refurbs going on. So for that hour, look, I'm out. Look at the refurb, talk to the guy that's there, back into work. And there was no curfew in terms of what time that hour had to be. It could have been between like 11 and even like 3 p.m.
Right.
So you can do it at 2 or you can do it at 12. So you can book around
depending
that.
On what meeting you got in the day.
That's
whatever,
it. Yeah. So it's quite flexible from that perspective, which I give thanks for as well. Yeah. And that's where I go back to sometimes, look, you create your path, but some of it is aided by other people.
Mm.
And that's where I give respect to that employee for that as well.
Yeah. I think being in Nottingham as well might have been a low-key like advantage for you as well, because you grow up in London, man, it's the distraction can be a lot, you know, parties.
You might turn around and say Nottingham is a distraction too, though.
I mean, maybe it was different for me because I'm London, I'm moving to Birmingham. But when I did, it felt like, you know, there wasn't as much emphasis on you know, stunting and just, having a nice car or whatever. Mm-hmm, like, you can just kind of like hustle and grind. Like, was that the same for you? Was it different? Because you obviously grew up in Nottingham.
I think I see your point of view, because I've got some cousins from London. They say similar to what you say about, look, there's not that kind of burden of I need to stunt kind of thing.
Yeah.
I went to university with a lot of London guys, as you know, and when I go to university with them, as an example, they'll say, oh, look, look, I've got to take a girl out, but I then got to go buy a whole new outfit.
So
I could spend £2 on a top, £100 on trainers and something else.
Five bills down.
But obviously, bear in mind, I was 22 at this age. So when they're saying that, I'm kind of from Nottingham. So it wasn't a normal thing.
Do you see what I mean?
I know now in the UK, look, it's a normal thing. You go flannels or you go Selfridges, you spend whatever. You spend a grand on an outfit. But back in my day, that wasn't normal. So growing up in Nottingham, it wasn't normal to do that. So when these London guys say it to me at university, I'm saying, what are you talking about?
Pop into JD and get a t-shirt or something.
Yeah. So I mean, so I think that was a kind of geographical thing back then. Nowadays, look, it's everywhere.
You have to do it, I guess.
Or people say you have to do it.
But
so it was different. There wasn't such an onus of that. I think Nottingham, it was like, look, if you had an Adidas tracksuit back then, you're fine.
You're the guy.
You're the guy, do you know what I mean? So there wasn't much of a burden on that side, I would say, of the stunting. Look, of course Gucci came in and stuff like that. And belts were in and stuff like that, and hats, but it wasn't as bad as it is now. I think now it's much worse.
Terrible.
I think it's terrible nowadays.
100%. With your deals as well, obviously, as you started to scale up and stuff, was it all, I guess, just money you were making from previous deals, now starting to leverage them, refinance, you know, maybe sell some of the units, or was it raising private investor?
I think it's a mixture of everything. So I think, as you know, naturally, if I started in 2013, which was my first house, you're now in 2017, so the one from 2013 has had enough growth that in 2017, when I'm going with my pot I've already got, the 2013 one's about to re-land.
Right.
Re-land meaning it's ready for a remortgage again. And now 13 to 17 is 4 or 5 years nearly. So the amount, we're now talking about my 17, 18 grand deposit, when I remortgage in 2017, it's 20 grand again that I'm getting back. So I've got all my money back now that I left in from earlier. So I go again with that, mix it in with maybe one of my friends that are now seeing what I'm doing and saying, look, we're now in London on our big salaries per year, 100K plus. We now want to come in with whatever it is, 50 grand or 60 grand. Then you hit COVID. And for me, I mean, I think COVID was a game changer in terms of a lot of friends that I had that saw me doing stuff for years with either myself or some other investors that I may have met over the years through kind of social media and stuff like that. A lot of my friends had turned around and said, look, COVID's come. I was nearly out of a job or I am out of a job. So can I come and work with you?
I
had a good kind of 4 or 5 of friends like that. So,
Wow.
I mean, look, it's a good amount of people and a good amount of some that came in to then say, look, let's go and do stuff. So COVID was a kind of a blessing in terms of, for me, to move forward to another level.
Yeah. No, it makes sense, because I guess now it's probably easier when it comes to like raising funds, finances, mm-hmm. because proof of work is there. People have seen you.
Mm-hmm.
In the earlier days, obviously you spoke about, you know, pitching to your uncle
and...
Back then, was there any other tips you'd probably give out to say how to kind of raise money? Obviously, the one way is just doing it and showing it.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, I mean, look, it's, as long as you're going to put the time in, I think that's the main thing. Because for me, I'll go back and say events was a game changer in terms of, not for me to say I've done an event and this came 2 months down the line, but for me to say, look, I did an event and 4 years down the line, the guy that attended the event told his cousin about me. I then meet his cousin, we sit down, we then do a transaction. But we're talking about like 4 years.
Right.
Do you see what I mean? So, and I can give you a few examples of how events went from that perspective in terms of me being out there, networking, meeting people, something coming later down the line. I used to do events for a marketing job that I did as well. And it was similar. You never saw the from events, it's like you spend a lot of money in events and promotion and marketing. You spend a lot of time there talking with people, but sometimes you didn't see the back end within 2 months as in the results.
Right.
I think events is more of a longer term thing, whereas let's say like an Instagram or a Facebook ad spend, for example, in a corporate world that I was in, they see quick returns.
Yeah.
They do a spend, someone clicks it, someone buys an iPad, an example.
Just like that.
So it's quick returns.
Right.
But the events is like, you spend more, but you don't always see it. And I liken that to what I did in property in terms of the networking. So look, I would put a tip out there, say, look, whether you, if you can't hold shows during an event, networking is still key as well. Because
hosting events is definitely a key thing.
It was key for me. Yeah, definitely key. But I think in terms of when I started hosting events, I think I was a little bit different as well in our time.
Yeah.
I think with all due respect as well, there wasn't probably as many kind of ethical people from my background.
Yeah, ethical, yeah.
Ethical hosting events back then.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, oh, look, this guy's from obviously a Black Caribbean background and he's hosting an event. Let's go and have a look and see what he's talking about. Mm. And don't get me wrong, there was all different cultures here, which was great to see. So yeah, definitely one of my best achievements. But definitely networking 100% is key.
Yeah, that's it, man. So I guess after that, obviously now you started in a few more deals, obviously. I'm assuming you went into commercial stuff as well, started buying commercial. Do you want to talk us a bit about doing that and converting it?
Again, so...
And generally sourcing your deals as well.
Yeah, so I think, again, look, I mean, I was talking off here and I said, look, my career is not like someone that's just been signed to Manchester United from 16 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
you're
not
right.
Like a Wayne Rooney that
took
got,
time.
Yeah, so mine took time. So I started on in the lower leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Someone like a Jamie Vardy, for example.
Yeah.
And you work your way up. So lower leagues mean, look, buy to let.
Yes.
Ready-made model.
Yes.
Then you go to another one.
Yeah.
Then I say, look, I'm ready for a 50K refurb. Mm. Now I'm ready for a 100K refurb and a new build.
Mm.
Okay, now I'm ready for the structural damage one that is at auction and I've not even seen it and I bought it blind.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Not saying I advise that, but for me, I see that I like a little bit of risk.
Okay.
And I know what's so bad about this house. If I've done a spreadsheet saying, here's all my refurb, and it goes for the price that I can pay for it and still make what I need to make, why do I need to see it? That's my opinion sometimes.
I bought
some wrecks, to be fair.
I was going
to
say, are you taking L's with that kind of
attitude? No. Because what I'm saying there is, look, you've got a spreadsheet, your kitchen, your boiler, everything that you know you do from scratch. You've got a spreadsheet saying, look, I'm taking this property back to brick.
And
to take it back to brick anyway is going to cost this.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to add another 10K in there because something's happening. Yeah. One of the walls have fallen down as well and I've got to rebuild it. And based on doing all that, I'm still going to make, for argument's sake, 40 grand,
let's say.
So everything that doesn't have to change on that list, so you put a new roof on there, 20 grand. You cross that line out because you don't need a roof.
Right.
So all of a sudden, your bottom line's gone from the 40 to 60.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm saying there is, because I haven't seen it,
there's the risk element.
Right. So because of the risk, I've put it on the sheets here, everything changes.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I've seen a photo, registered for the auction and said, look, I'm in there.
The numbers don't lie, then, there, man.
They don't lie, And look, some of them are wrecks.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. Look, some of them you think you're going to make 100 grand on, you make 70 or something like that, as an example. But look, I was willing or happy for that level of risk.
Mm.
I'm answerable to myself. So that's how I started to go up, doing these structural damage ones, doing some that I even like demolished and built some big extensions on the side of them, or even just demolished and rebuilt them instead. So going to like 2021 early, that's when I kind of said, kind of do more commercial or more bigger stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
So such like the new builds and kind of have that as my strategy, so to speak, and forget kind of the ready-made buy to let, because I had a fair few that I obviously owned beforehand. Not to miss, obviously, the student HMOs are in there as well.
Yeah.
So there's a mixture of everything.
I think I probably know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Like, did there need to be like a mentality change from going from like the smaller project to like doing bigger things, or was it just like this is it, innit? Like, it's just the same thing, bigger.
Same thing. I mean, I think the problem for me is I say that the headache's the same on all of them.
Mm.
That's the one answer that I've got. So, and when I say that, I mean, on the small little 20 grand refurb, the problem is, you're building a wall and a piece of plaster falls down behind you. Okay, it costs 200 quid to fix, but the point I'm making is, there's the problem. The 200 pound piece of plaster's dropped off.
Right.
I'm doing a 200 grand demolish and rebuild.
Right.
I didn't plan to rebuild that wall over there, just the other three.
Three.
But now that fourth one's fallen down.
Okay.
So it's the same hassle, but that's going to cost me 15 grand to fix.
Right.
Okay. I'm doing a new build. I'm digging in the floor.
Yeah.
Well, there's a little bit of clay. So when there's a little bit of clay in the floor, I've got to go a bit deeper. I've got to do certain things in the ground to make it stronger. So there's my kind of stress, but guess what? It cost me 40 grand or 30 grand more. Do you know what I mean? So what I'm saying is, they're all the same stresses and issues, but just cost a different amount.
Yeah.
I'm doing a new build. The neighbours complaining that I built it 20 centimetres wrong. Do you see what I mean? So what I'm saying there, it's the same hassle, but this time it's the neighbour.
Yeah,
and the bigger problem with him is he could tell the council, so I've now got a bigger problem.
Yeah.
But it's the same stress for all of them.
Literally, you move like there's a solution to every problem. That's, and I love it. And that's a good way to approach life.
100%. I've come across problems before where they are bigger problems. Yeah. And just to give a quick example, look, you talk to a council say, look, we're not happy with a certain design.
Mm-hmm.
For example, commercial to residential. We're not happy with the reduction of acoustic mm-hmm. in the building.
Mm-hmm.
So look, that's a big problem in terms of sound test. You're talking to a council.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've got sound tests, you've got certain people that are saying, engineers saying, look, let's do this now. Let's put times three sound block boards.
Yeah.
So for me, it's a bigger problem. It costs more money.
Yeah.
Let's put this in the wall.
Yeah.
So there are bigger problems to solve. They are solvable.
Yeah.
But some of them take, I've done before with council, like 4 months, 5 months, you're going back and forth on the design. Acoustic hangers off the ceiling to reduce the noise impact.
Yep.
So look, there are bigger problems.
Yeah.
They do have solutions, but they are longer term to solve. And they're not as easy.
Yeah. One thing I do like about your journey is that, and I think you even said it to me when I met you in Nottingham, you was just like, look, I started off with the buy-to-lets, went to the HMOs, and you started to go up to more complicated and find more problems, mainly because as well, it was boring to stay where you were. Like, it was just boring. Like, you want to find those problems, you want to solve them because it makes it more challenging, it makes it more exciting.
Fun, of course.
And then obviously, it ultimately makes more money. But, you know, it's funny because most investors, that kind of see, it's kind of what they do. They start with buy-to-lets. They want to... just a little bit more stress, just a little bit more, not a lot, just a little bit more.
Mm.
And that seems to be your strategy, and I can see how that's kind of, you know, shown in your portfolio.
Yeah, and I think the key thing, I mean, look, I get some people even ask me, look, I want to do land transactions.
Yeah.
It's my first deal.
Right.
And as small as, like, they don't understand, maybe they've got to do, like, a ground test.
Mm-hmm.
Could be 5 grand, mm-hmm. could be 3 grand. Before. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden, you're going through legals, but you still got this test that you want to do in the ground.
Yeah.
Do you know
what I mean? Got the property yet. Yeah.
So you haven't got the property yet.
Yeah.
Little things like that, and sometimes people don't understand. And from a cash flow perspective, if you're already full time in property and you're making whatever it is, let's say £1,000 a month and you buy to let,
right.
for you now to jump in and say, I want to do, let's say, whatever, a land transaction, you've got a 5 grand report to pay, but you've already got the £1,000 per month for your living, food, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
then what?
So, and this is where I think the journey is important in terms of if you can have, look, again, even like rent to rent, some people have great rent to rents that do the cash flow for them, or HMOs. I think that's priceless in terms of leveling up, because you've got the cash flow coming in to now deal with these extra reports that are coming in of £300 and £500,
that's so important.
This valuation, that valuation, and the legal undertaking. You can soften the blow if your cash flow is there. So I'd say for anyone, look, it's key to have the cash flow there. But at the same time, look, if you've got a big investor that comes along and says, look, I'm going to pay for everything, and you do the land transaction, then hey. But at the same time, sometimes it's always good to put your own money where your mouth is
and
put some hurt money in there. So I've had some transactions that I do set up that way in terms of, look, the investor comes along, but you still have to put your money where your mouth is and use your own hurt money where you need sometimes.
Got you,
do you know what I mean? Not that the report comes in at 500 quid, the investor's funded 200 grand, and then you ask them 500 quid.
Yo, come on, man. Speak on that.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. That's a big thing.
Because sometimes it comes down to that relationship of, look, they've funded 200 grand, you know that, but
come on,
to go and ask the 500 quid, it's difficult. Do you know what I mean? It's such a small amount, so just sort it.
Get it done.
But if you haven't got the cash flow to get it done, do you see what I mean?
Yeah. I've had moments like that with him when I've said, look, I can't lie, I just got a report back from whoever it was, a contractor. It's after £200. Should I go ask the investor? Just go sort that out, bro.
You can't ask.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? You're thinking, that weekend I had planned. Down the drain. Let me just.
You can't be asking for that money.
Yeah. Exactly.
How do you, so I know as well, how do you structure your deals? Like, what I mean by, okay, let's say you got money from investors to kind of buy the property.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get development finance? Do you get bridging finance? Like, how does that?
Yeah, so again, look, I think over the years, things have changed in terms of my earlier days. It was a case of I'll get a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing much about development finance. I'm not really needing it as much in the earlier days, paying for the refurb myself. Then going on to a few purchases that were like just cash purchases and then doing the refurb as cash.
Mm-hmm.
Then realizing again, so again, down to learning, you meet people and someone says, look, we can give you the money to do that refurb.
Right.
Going into some HMOs where I was doing like 100K refurbs and thinking, wait a minute, the deposit is already like 100 grand.
Mm-hmm.
100 grand refurb takes you to 200, or the deposit's 110 or 120, but the bank's going to give me the money for the refurb.
Right.
So you're only ever out of pocket by 120.
Mm.
So as you go on, you learn things like that and say, well, hang on a minute, that deal works better for development finance.
Mm.
Now I find that a majority of deals work better for development finance, unless it's a run-of-the-mill buy-to-let. I still feel that bridge probably outweighs going development finance and getting money for the reefer
because
you're paying interest on it.
Yeah.
But obviously, again, on another note, someone would say, well, you can over leverage yourself by having 10 sites and 10 development finances,
right.
which is true.
That's true.
Because you can, because cash flow is key. Yeah. But look, in terms of how much can you do more with development finance. Mm. Look, just giving you a quick example, if there's a land transaction that's two units and I'm putting down $100,000 deposit, I now need, let's say, $260,000 for the build. I've put $100,000 down, the $260,000 for the build, the bank's obviously giving me.
Yeah.
Rather than me putting $100,000 down, plus $260,000, that's $360,000.
Mad.
So yeah, development finance is, I think it's a game changer.
Game changer, right.
Game changer for me in terms of moving forward and leveling up.
Yeah. You start using it more like 2021, isn't it?
2021. Yeah, so look, 2021 was a game changer in terms of leveling up, doing bigger deals, and just celebrating. Yeah,
just to ask as well, with just tips regarding development finance and stuff, would you, how, because people are listening saying, obviously, the way it works, the bank will give you money to do up the works to the property. People are thinking, oh, isn't that easy? Like, so what's your advice on what's the best way to go about making sure you get development finance? Is it the deal has to stack? Is it, do you know what I mean? What would you kind of advise or your experience?
Yeah, 100%. Look, the deal has to stack. That's the main thing. I think, look, more than likely, I think every bank that I've dealt with will have an element of QS. So look, a deal, I do it on some of my student HMOs.
Yeah.
So I do $100,000 refurb. I'll still do a development finance on that. Right. So it just makes sense.
Okay.
They may not employ a QS, which is a quantity surveyor. Yeah. Or they may employ like an in-house kind of analysis guy.
Yeah. Listen, you take picture, you show them the works and you still got to pay £700 for
that's it.
But
So they'll have someone like that, correct? So the bigger deals, look, don't get me wrong, they have QSs that are proper paid $4,000, whatever they're paid. Yeah. But on those transactions, look, if you can get your figures correct, because look, you say it's $20,000 refurb and it's actually 50, they're going to say to you, no, we're not from it anyway. Like, they're not stupid.
Yeah.
And then what you kind of done there is you kind of not giving yourself a blacklist for that lender, but they're kind of eliminating you in terms of thinking,
you're not serious.
This guy's not serious. They know what he's doing. Yeah.
Cool.
But when you go to the lender on some of the bigger deals and say, look, here's my mains contractor, here's my architect, here's my structural engineer, here's all the people, here's their paper of their insurance that I've already got for you as well.
Yeah, didn't know that.
And you're giving it up front.
For real.
The underwriter's sitting there thinking, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
They instruct the QS. The QS has got all the information he needs. He's got a breakdown of the spend per unit, potentially, as well. Mm. And that's a key thing. I think more about the team that you're using. So not necessarily that me as an individual needs that experience, but the team of the guys that I'm using for this build, that I can present that as a case to the lender.
Right.
Not saying it'll get the sign off, but they'll be more than happy with that.
Yeah.
And look, if you need to bring someone in with experience, then do that as well.
Oh, that helps as well, right?
It helps as well, yeah. But you can always pull off the contractor if you've got a tight relationship with them, or you show the bank that you've got a relationship with them.
Right.
Because you can have tight documents. You can have the JCT contract. Mm-hmm. You can have other contracts in place to show that, look, you're kind of passing the book to him.
Yeah.
And the bank will kind of say, it's been given to him, so fine.
Yeah.
Nice. Just in terms of, I guess, one of your newer deals, maybe one of your new build deals. Do you want to talk through numbers, how you found it, and how's it going at the moment? Are we good to
complete a deal or in the pipeline deal?
Oh, sorry.
give us two.
Or exchange deal, like which one? Or completed deal sitting there waiting to build?
Yeah. Give us that completed deal waiting to build.
Yeah, okay. So I got a completed one waiting to build. Again, obviously,
there's levels to this, guys. You can see it.
Guys, listen up, man.
So I've got 14 units over in Lincolnshire. So I do Lincolnshire quite a lot, doing single units over there, two units, three units of new build. So I've got 14 units over there, which I paid, top of my head, I think it's £415,000. If I check my purse, it would be on there, but it's £415,000 for the land.
All investor finance?
So we paid outright for the land between all the investors. I think the top of my head, there's five of us on there, paid outright for the land. We would then build based on development lending. So top of my head again, I believe it's 1.9 plus 10%. So I believe it's £2 million lending from the bank that's been given, top of my head. Obviously there's other costs around there, like reports and architect drawings and stuff like that, but we sorted that kind of beforehand anyway. So that's on top of the 415. So yeah, build cost roughly $2 million. GDV on that one, MRICS is 3.7 GDV. So again, MRICS 3.7, I'll probably say might squeeze another kind of couple hundred extra from an estate agent. Top of my head, I think just short of £1 million, I think, profit on that one, top of my head. Without me doing the maths again. But
are you guys looking to sell that?
I'm looking to sell that because there's quite a few of us on there. There's about five of us on there. But what we have said kind of top level is, look, if two guys or one guy wants to maybe not take his share, but remortgage one and hold it, then it's tied it down to him as well.
That's
my biggest deal at the moment today. That's 14 units, mixture of semis and detached. I haven't, to be honest, I haven't started it. What I have done is I've done the footings on one of them just to make sure the planning didn't expire, because it was due to expire.
Yeah.
Just make sure everything's in place before we kind of, I guess, press go. Obviously, look, cash flow being the most key thing as well on something like that.
I've got a question on the back of that as well. So obviously, there's panic in the market at the moment. Somebody might be looking at that and saying, "Rah, but are you gonna be able to sell it?" Because obviously, once it's built, again, I don't know how long the build is gonna take, 12 months, 18 months. But are you sharing this panic, or are you like, have you got a plan in place, or what's your vibe on
that? I think I'm quite a laid back person. Obviously, you probably saw by this podcast. But
facts.
Look. For me, look, separate to that one, look, I'm doing another transaction, student HMO, something like that, regardless of, let's say, what that house is then worth, you know you're going to cash flow on cash student flow, HMO. You're bringing in, let's say, for 40 grand per annum. So you kind of sit there and say, well, even if I broke even on that, bringing in 40 grand per annum, kind of not so what, but so what in a way.
Right.
Look, that bigger transaction that you said there, I think, look, if there's a slight backwards movement in terms of the prices, I think that the easy out option is, as long as you can still refinance it, pay the lender back, and look, not saying we want to break even, but even if we did, so the profit went from all that 700, 800 grand to zero, you pay the lender back, which is unlikely, because it's so big, the percentage. So even the market went back by 10%, and that was cut in half, then it's not as bad.
I think the beauty with the sort of projects that you're doing, sort of the 1 mil, 2 mil, 3 mil kind of stuff, there's enough, just enough like profit in it, that even if there's a correction, you're still pretty much in a good place.
Compared to the buy to let. Exactly. Yeah, like I'm doing some buy to be fair. So I've got, I'm versatile. Look, I like the big deals. I like the student HMOs. Right. I haven't done a small one for years, three, 4 years. So I think a month ago or 2 months ago, me and a couple of partners, we said, oh, look, I'm at home, mate. I'm a home guy. I'm at home or in the office.
Yeah.
Laptop's open. Look, let's just register for this auction, mate. So anyway, register.
just buying houses.
Yeah, let's register. So anyway, we bought three houses in total. Look, run of the mill buy to lets. But again, you know the margins are tight on those ones. They're tight. So as soon as you start saying, look, there was a nice kitchen. I said to my friend, I said, look, man, I'm past. Look, trying to say,
make it look nice.
Yeah, I said, look, mate, let me do one for my Instagram at least. Look, it's a gram more. I said, come on, mate. And it's like, yeah, but we should be paying like 3.5 grand in the kitchen. I said, I know it should be 2 grand, but I said, come on, like, let's do it. He gave me the go ahead. I said, look, I'll pay for it, mate, I'm in pocket. So so we did it. But there's always little elements where you pay the extra 500 quid on something, and you're like, oh no, it's a run the mill wide to let. Like the profit's only 15 grand, and now it's gone to 10.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh no, the bridge, another 2 months.
Yeah.
Look, it's difficult with those ones. The bigger ones.
Romero likes the stress, man.
He lights up when it comes to it, man.
But moving forward, then, is it? I guess more the same. You're gonna mix it up, stay versatile, doing some of the big projects, but mix up with some smaller ones. Is that a plan for 2023, or are you doing anything new? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the bigger ones is where I'm at. To be fair, I think the small ones look great for like being in and out 6 weeks, just keeping you on your toes a little bit as well. Like I said, I just completed two of them, and one of them still finished off at the moment. But they're great just to be around and mobile and versatile. And even for the Instagram, look, run the mill by to let what I can still do it. Do you know what I mean? that's the kind of message. I'm not just trying to build two houses and someone's looking at Instagram saying, oh yeah, but you're building them for a year, mate. Or you're building four houses, but you're taking a year. Which is true, and that's what happens.
You want to show stuff.
I've got friends that look at me and say, we sit down sometimes and they say, oh yeah, but you haven't seen the finished article of the build you're doing.
Okay.
I'm like, oh yeah, look, here it is.
Yeah.
But we're obviously to them, they might be doing something else like selling other items.
Yeah.
And it's quick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I hear that. That's a really good point.
So I said, oh look, buy to let, look, 6 weeks in and out. Look at this. You know what I mean? I can still do it. I can still cut it at the top or bottom.
For real.
You know what I mean? So it's just trying to be relevant. And be relevant. Because I still get people say, oh mate, what you think about buy to let?
Yeah.
I can't sit here as like a property guru and say, oh well, I don't know, mate.
Exactly.
I did a deal 6 years ago.
Exactly.
Well no, mate, I just did one now. Do you want to come and have a look?
No, for real.
What do you want to do? Do you want to see the numbers?
It's
on my Instagram. There's a video here.
For real.
Two things with that as well. Just before we end, we know that you like to do a lot of these sort of like investor days and sort of inviting young people. Like, talk to us about that, because you know, like you said, we were saying earlier, some people that are doing some of the biggest stuff out there, you're not allowed to go on site. You're not allowed to like, see the project.
It's hard to.
But generally, you see so many young people coming to your site, being able to like touch the actual property and get involved and ask you deep questions.
Yeah,
like,
100%.
Why'd you do that? Like,
I think, look, yeah, so for me, that's going back to when I was younger again. And I think you asked me, look, who did I look at and who could I pull on? And the answer to that was no one. So, look, I'm a guy now that's here for all these kids now that are 18, 17, 16 that you can kind of pull. You can pull me. So you can send me a DM and say, look, when's this next one happening? I want to come across, come along. And it's not paid, it's free of charge for anyone that goes to university, college. I haven't done one for, I think, about the past year for a while, but I've done about four or five of those ones for kids, and they've been good. 10 kids come along, 6 kids come along. But yeah, it's been great just to give back. We go get a little bite to eat as well. You know what I mean? Have a bit of a chat. Like, for me, I'm not superior to anyone else. We're, we're all the same. I used to be your age, and I would have kind of been looking for someone to give me an opportunity like that. To say, come and have a look.
I see as well, like property insiders as well.
Yeah.
I think it was episode four.
Four, I think it was. Yeah, correct.
How was that as well? Because that's getting a lot of like praise out there.
So that was awesome. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, shout out Kazzy on that one. But yeah, man, that was great. That was it was great to be on there and just to showcase. I mean, everyone that was on there was showcasing, I guess, what they do. Everyone's humble on there together as well, and everyone, I guess, came together. That's the main thing. And I think nowadays, I mean, the movement that I see, I mean, again, I'm not out there probably as much as some other people, but what I see that's going on and everyone coming together is just, it's great. It's lovely to see.
It's amazing.
Events and stuff like that. So
I'm really dreaming of hopefully like next year, you know, us coming together doing some big events and really shutting it down, like, you know, how, you know, almost like an artist. You know how artists like shuts down?
Like a concert.
Yeah, a concert. Yeah. Like getting loads of
property
people down and, you know, some artists and, you know, shutting it down. So hopefully we put it together, man. But those investor days as well, we'd love to give our listeners a chance to come down. So we'll probably organise a day with you as well and get some people down.
Yeah.
So. But bro, it's been amazing. Any final questions?
Yeah, so final question, I guess, is, again, go back to the panic. Obviously, interest rates going up and blah, blah, blah. Are you doing anything differently in 2023 or you're just moving, man?
Yeah, I think, we'll obviously have a look because some of the buy-to-let ones, like I said, I've done some recently. And when you look at the interest rate and a lot of the quotes nowadays, they're like the 5.5 and 6%.
I didn't even know that was possible.
But yeah, it's crazy. So you're looking at them and thinking, look, that 300 quid that I've made on that buy-to-let now down to 150, for example. So look, from the student HMO perspective, look, I'm still in that market. They're always going to cash flow great. So even at 8%, those ones are still, they're still there. So yeah, still in that market, still actively looking in that market. A couple of things that are obviously due to start in the new year on in that market as well. And the new build game, look, you can still go in there, do the new build, sell it, for example, or rent it out and just accept that you're going to make a little bit less.
Cool.
Yeah, that's where I am. And look, like I said, I'm not eliminating any model.
Open
to all the models, but still new build game with the student buy-to-lets in the background.
Overseas at all, or are you staying in the UK?
still in the UK for now.
I see in Dubai a couple of times. Maybe you're trying to take over Dubai.
Still in the UK for now, but yeah, in the future, a little holiday home somewhere else, won't go amiss.
Love that. Bro, thanks, bro, man.
Really appreciate you coming through.
Yeah, appreciate
sharing the story, sharing some gems. Obviously, we're going to connect you with our listeners, be doing a lot of stuff in the new year, so thanks for coming again.
Perfect.
Love what you're doing and just keep going, man. Like, we appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Word, bro.
But yeah, man, hope you enjoyed the episode. We'll be back again soon, guys.
Back again soon. Stay blessed. Peace.
Thank you.
Some of these guys just bad on a desktop, trying to bring on a network. Me and Elizabeth still in a wedlock, I don't know what them guys upset for. How can I not shit on my doorstep, somebody smoking next door? Zeds were white like Parmesan and her boxes green like pesto. Pasta, family first, the money come second, the rest don't matter. They think that I came out quick, they don't know about the rest of the chapters. I'm from where the Jack boys active, don't sleep with your window open.